This isn't just about hitting a button and all of a sudden you're AI enabled and it's done.
It can still go very wrong. I'm sure all of us have had experiences where we've been talking to an AI or chatbot on a business's website and it started to spew out the wrong information.
The tools are so easy that it lulls people into thinking they don't need to set a goal or understand what success looks like.
Have you really thought about what success will look like? And have you really defined it, and do you really know? And then if it goes wrong, what's the risk?
Today, I'm joined by Christopher Kellner, who's CEO of a company called Digital Genius. And Chris didn't start in technology. He began in banking. He moved into SaaS as a sales leader, becoming the first digital hire there. And then over the years, he built teams there and then rose to the ranks of CEO. So would love to welcome Chris to the show. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
Tell us a little bit about Digital Genius. What's the goal of the company? You know, I understand it's in the customer service space and building AI agents there. And so I think it's quite relevant to the topic of rebuilding the company itself, what you do.
So Digital Genius is specifically a technology SaaS company building AI agents for e-commerce. I guess we've been around for about 10 years. So building AI chatbots, AI agents, really before the whole AI wave caught fire. And ultimately what we do is, you know, we help our customers' lives be a lot better by automating their repetitive questions and tasks. So ultimately their people are there to deliver value for their customers.
As we were kind of prepping for this, you said something that stuck with me, which is you haven't had to reinvent the company from scratch for the wave, but it has accelerated. And so what do you mean by this kind of acceleration versus reinvention in terms of what you were doing as a company?
Yeah, AI is not new. You know, it's been around for 20, 30 years. The idea is that machines could, I guess, copy what humans do and potentially do it in a more productive and efficient way is kind of a story. I think when our company's been around for about 10 years, I think there was the famous, I don't know if you remember, there was Ex Machina was probably the first famous AI movie when our company started out, that you know, AI is this kind of technology, this wave. I think a Digital Genius, you know, we've been doing agentic AI for more than 5 years for our e-commerce customers. But what's really changed is, I guess it's really accelerated the way we do things and it has allowed technology to become less robotic and more human-like.
Talk to me about what do you think has really changed in the last few years that has enabled that transition?
Probably a few years ago, no one really knew the terminology large language models. Everyone was talking about machine learning. Everyone was talking about neural nets,
right?
You know, taking data, training models, and allowing it to talk to the data set and ask it questions. I guess what large language models has allowed the data sets to become a lot bigger. Right. And I guess the real difference with what ChatGPT is doing or Anthropic or Gemini is it's allowing the AI to be a lot more human-like, less scripted and less template-based.
Got it. Yeah. I mean, it seems like it's a lot more reactive to the situation versus having to plan out everything, you know, you're needing to do with the AI.
Exactly. But it can still go very wrong. I'm sure all of us have had experiences where we've been talking to an AI chatbot on a business's website and it started to spew out the wrong information. So I think that still is the case that yes, it is more human-like and is able to think more on its feet, but it still can go wrong.
Yeah, no, I mean, it makes sense. And so we'd love to dive in a little bit more. You know, clearly you come from the go-to-market side. So you mentioned the company has 15 to 20 people in sort of sales and marketing, and you're using AI across a number of different functions in that business. What's AI allowed you to do for your team to start doing and stop doing? You know, I guess, what do you feel is the role of humans in this situation, and how does it enable them to do more faster, ultimately, I guess, close more business?
Yeah, it's a really good question because everyone's thinking about how do you implement AI and your go-to-market. And obviously, with us, Digital Genius, being an AI company, this is what we're thinking about all the time. And it really goes back to the ethos. We're trying to deliver the same experience for our customers that we're trying to deliver internally for our employees as well, where we really want our team to be able to focus on the high value tasks and leave the machine to do the more, you know, the more kind of automated, simple, repetitive things. So what does that mean in the world of go-to-market specifically? You know, the machine is, the AI is there hopefully to help you kind of understand your ICP, select your accounts, identify your triggers, potentially write some of your messaging, but the team is still really there to do things like cold calls. The team is there to write, you know, high quality, very targeted messaging. You know, the team is still there to answer questions. So again, it's really using the AI to do simple, repetitive things and using the team to really add value.
In terms of the calls, like the call gets over, does AI help the rep learn what they could have been doing? And how does that happen? Like, where does it get that information from?
Yeah, I think that really makes a really big difference. And I think it really does, I guess, in the very simple thing after a call, right? Once upon a time, you were sitting in a room writing notes by hand.
Right.
Then you started to do more calls on Zoom and you were sitting there typing, right? And it was quite annoying, that noise of somebody typing on a meeting, but otherwise, or you were nosing it down with hand, right? Today, very simply, AI is very good through all the tools, Zoom, Gong, whatever it might be in terms of note-taking, right? So very quickly, it allows you to decipher notes and then write very effective follow-ups. I guess where we're kind of looking to extend the capabilities of AI is a little bit in call coaching. So we run like typical like MedPick sales process at DG and trying to be fairly stringent with our team and kind of very sticking to the process. And we built almost like an assessment machine so that it was like using like a Zapier integration into some of our tools so that when somebody, after a call, somebody will get a scorecard based on on kind of the MedPick approach that we're encouraging the team to follow.
What are some of the things that you find initially when someone starts using that tool? And then what do you find over time?
Yeah. I think when people start initially, there's some inertia there. I guess what a lot of these tools do is they allow, firstly, for people to coach themselves better,
right?
And then two, for you to have a much more effective process with your manager. I guess, you know, there is always that idea of some people are not so comfortable, don't spend a lot of time coaching themselves. I think the AI tools make it a lot easier. And I think for the top performers, if you get into a process of allocating just a smaller amount of time every week, that makes a huge difference to your performance.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, as a manager, if you're constantly going back and utilizing a lot of those tools, summaries, scorecards, and you're working, how do you get better? I think that naturally creates a slightly different kind of running of a go-to-market engine that you might have had before.
Yeah, I'm not personally familiar with MedPick, but I am with other different sales methodologies. Where's the biggest problems you find across your team? Is it sort of like teasing out the root cause of the problem? Is there more quantifying it or mapping an organization to help guide a deal through completion? Like, where do you find the biggest opportunities are that, and did some of them surprise you?
Yeah. I think Digital Genius is a fairly small company, right? We're less than 100 people. What that means is I think a lot of challenges that you have is consistency, right? Because you only have so much time to allocate into enablement, managing, leading. And I think consistency is always a challenge. I think for a lot of businesses out there today, right? You'll have top performers doing the top 20% of the revenue and then the rest of the team doing the bottom 80%. And there's a very strong division there. And I think that hopefully, you know, over time, AI will probably allow the top performers to shine even more. And then unfortunately, it will give an opportunity for the people that are not performing at the top to get to the top. And then for those that are not willing to put in the effort and the time and are not really utilizing the tools at their disposal, you know, they ultimately won't succeed.
Right. Yeah. And you mentioned, you know, one of the things that we chatted about was the difference in not the tools, but the people you're trying to reach in the UK versus in the US are quite different, you know, in terms of cold calling and things like that. What are some of the things that you had noticed there?
Yeah, and I guess just for a bit of context, you know, we are a kind of UK headquartered business that has done really well, scaling our technology in the UK and Europe. And now we're thinking like every software company does about going to the US. And I think we found things that are quite similar, but also things that are quite different. Like I guess one, as you said, Rick, one distinct behavior is people are less likely to answer cold calls in the US than they are in the UK. So if you want to use cold calling as a tactic, you have to make a lot more cold calls.
Right.
And so it's a slightly different approach. And I think our sometimes, you know, the US is a little bit more, people are more, you know, don't like salespeople. Right. So you have to take a slightly different approach in terms of how you get, you know, maybe guiding someone through a, you know, a journey in a slightly different way. And then a lot of the behavior is the same. Like ultimately, it comes down to like what are the pain points you're solving and how you can help solve them.
Right. Yeah. I mean, obviously, a lot of it's the same. I mean, I think most people that are in any kind of position of leadership get so many calls a day. They don't know the number. They're not going to pick up the line. And so that becomes a challenge there. In terms of, you mentioned sort of inertia and people, getting people introduced to AI and be part of the culture of the business. What are some of the ways that you sort of kickstarted employee interest and showcasing AI within the business to get that going?
Yeah, and I think I only became CEO of my current company earlier this year. And I think one of the key things that observing like the difference between a very successful startup and potentially a startup that's not so successful today, typically the very successful ones are looking how can they be as productive and efficient as possible. And a lot of that comes with, you know, how are they using AI and automation internally? And I think that is a little bit of a culture because, you know, again, for a small company, it's hard to have for a bigger company, you might have a go-to-market team that's focused specifically on, not even an operational go-to-market team that's 5 or 10 or 15 people heavy within an organization focusing specifically on this. I think in a smaller company, you're looking for people to stand up and put their hand up and figure out like actually where are their parts of their day-to-day job that potentially could be automated so they should be focusing on different things.
Right.
So actually what I did a few months ago now at DG was run an internal competition. So on a kind of town hall, said like this is key and we want everyone to be really involved. So we ran a little competition where we gave everyone like the opportunity to build their own like AI agent, you know, say using a tool like Lovable. And come back, present that to the rest of the company, and then the winner was given an award.
Oh, nice.
I think it was like a gift voucher.
Got it. And is there anything that surprised you about that competition, either positively or not necessarily negatively, but something that you learned from it?
I think it was positive, and some people were able to build some really cool things. I think that would be number one, and able to do, they were quite comfortable to do that in their own time. And actually those are things that we now use through the business. I guess, you know, unsurprisingly, in a company of like close to 100 people, there were people that were not interested at all in today. And I think, again, that's, you know, there's only so much you can do at the CEO level. That probably has to come, you know, all the way down from the approach with their managers and their teams as well.
Yeah. I mean, speaking of, is there, you know, I guess as we sort of are on speaking about people for a second, is there a role for HR to play either in the review process? I don't necessarily mean as a stick, but more of a development opportunity for people to say like, hey, every quarter someone must do 2 or 3 AI improvements to their day-to-day or something like this.
Yeah, I think definitely. I mean, I hear for some companies today, right, they're mandating all the way from the top back down, so including the CEO, you know, to building AI agents yourself to use them in your day-to-day. And I think, again, if you're not comfortable on how to build one, you're at a disadvantage to everyone else. So I guess that could form part of your performance reviews, you know, part of what everyone's talking about in their kind of QBRs. If you run like a monthly like OKR framework, forming as part of that, I think you have to continue to talk about it and think about it so that really kind of scatters from kind of the top down.
I mean, that makes a lot of sense to me because people need to see the behavior modeled and it needs to be encouraged within the business, which means you can't just run one hackathon or one kind of event. It needs to be something that's a regular occurrence.
Exactly.
As far as AI and customer service, I mean, clearly you have a perch where you can see across a lot of different companies, prospects, and customers, I imagine, from the conversations. And AI and customer service is certainly a hot topic. There's definitely been a lot of people saying, now, anecdotally, you hear a lot of customers that are like meaning end users that are not so happy about it. But then you hear a lot of leaders saying the metrics are better. It's more cost effective. Talk to me about like what separates the customers or the companies that are doing AI pilots and customer service well versus ones that are doing it poorly.
Yeah, and I think to frame this, there was a recent MIT report just a few weeks ago that said that 95% of all generative AI projects fail.
Oh,
I think it's maybe that number's too high,
right.
But ultimately, I think it does come down to the fact that today, obviously from top down, everyone's like, use AI. But what does that actually mean? Right. I think that there's a lot of reasons why projects can fail, can be a lack of data, can be resources, can be stakeholder skepticism. But I think more and more, it's one, like, you know, have you actually defined the problems you're looking to solve?
Mm.
You know, how are you going to measure success?
Right.
What does kind of the implementation rollout plan look like? And then, you know, who are you going to partner with in this, right? If this is
right
internally, if you're building something internally, have you partnered with the right stakeholders that have the technical expertise to build something? If you're partnering with an external partner, you know, do they have the know-how to understand actually how to solve your use cases? Or is it just, you know, have they just built like a wrapper on top of ChatGPT that potentially has the danger of hallucinating, and that immediately kills everybody's confidence in the project?
Yeah. No, I mean, it's interesting that you're talking about these things like defining success, understanding why you're doing this, how to measure it, what's your playbook. I mean, these all sound like basics in any kind of business.
Yeah, you would think so. But I think when, again, AI in theory is so easy to
right.
build things now on ChatGPT, everyone thinks they're an expert in some form or another.
Right. But it's almost reality, like that, yeah. The tools are so easy that it lulls people into thinking they don't need to set a goal or understand what success looks like.
Exactly.
Do you think that risk is bigger with AI than a typical project? Just because if you ask, I mean, I'm just going to say, like, let's say a project would be 2 months to develop a prototype. Someone's going to ask for the justification, but if you can build a prototype in 5 minutes, no one's going to ask for the justification for building that prototype and was the time wasted or not.
Yeah, I think there is a lot of risk. It is time intensive, both if you're considering like what's the right vendor to partner with, or you're building right. something internally, right? That is time intensive probably for a large group of people. And in our experience, that's typically like going all the way up to the C-suite where, you know, their time is very valuable and expensive.
Right.
I think one, and then two, you know, have you really thought about what success will look like? And have you really defined it? And do you really know? And then if it goes wrong, what's the risk? And right again, if there's an element of the, there's always the danger of AI hallucinating and sending out the wrong information.
Right.
Whose neck is going to be on the line if it does that? And how serious will it be?
So let's be more specific, because I think AI and customer service is a very popular topic, and it's like, it's a lot of cost. It's also quite important. And so there's a big risk to getting it wrong. What are the right goals? I mean, if I'm being honest, if I look across the ecosystem, most people are like, can I take out 80% of the cost and keep the CSAT levels the same? Are those good goals, or are there better goals?
Yeah, again, I think for every business, it's a little bit different. I think number one, you know, are you giving AI the same tools that you're humans have, right? That's often right. So that's where things like integrations and processes are involved. And then I think number two, is AI able to do at least the same job that your humans are doing, or better? Right? Ultimately, you want it to be better because it's faster, it's higher quality, it's lower cost, it's more efficiency. But I say that's at a minimum. Is it able to? Are you able to give it the same chance of success as your human reps? And then is it able to deliver at least the same quality in a much faster way than your humans would be able to do?
Yeah. And plus it's 24/7. So people might be able to get better answers than waiting.
Exactly. And, you know, most people do their shopping on the weekend. So who wants to wait till the Monday morning to get an answer to their inquiry, right? Are they going to go and shop with someone else that provides support over the weekend, right?
Yeah.
I think there was a stat recently which kind of read, I think it was like 40% plus of purchases are impulse purchases.
Right.
But if no one is available to support that impulse purchase, if they have questions about a product, then where are they going to go? They're going to go somewhere else. You're going to lose that customer.
Yeah. No, it's interesting. I was just listening to the Amazon earnings call and talking about Rufus. And they mentioned that, you know, I think, you know, it has, I don't say a bad rap, but there are not a lot of people that have given a lot of credence. And one of the stats they just released was that 60% of the people that use it end up purchasing that product. And which indicates that if you're interacting with those bots on your PDP or on the website, that those are your users that have high purchase intent, because they really want to know if this is going to work for them.
Exactly. And it's there and then, right? I think it's that idea that once upon a time, customer service was reactive, right? And you didn't really want to hear from, your goal was like, let's get your ticket volume down as low as possible. Let's get that contact order ratio as low as possible so that you never hear from your customers. I think today, you know, every customer landing on your website is an opportunity to engage them, like, you know, get that, engage them as fast and as quickly as possible and help them. And that's going to have a huge impact on your metrics and your conversion rates.
Yeah. Let's talk about that engagement in terms of the service you give someone on a website or in support channels. In terms of like upsell or converting them to a sales opportunity and not just answering a question, maybe trying to increase their basket size or adding additional products. Is that something that you believe, as we sit here, is the domain of AI, or is it something that's still a little bit further off, or is it more of a it depends answer?
I think it depends, but you know, I think you know, if you imagine you're shopping on a website and the website knows what you bought previously, when it was, like maybe you're going shopping for your wife's birthday,
right?
If you can engage that customer then and go, oh, last year you bought X. We've now got a discount on Y. Can I help you? And would you like anything else? I think humans are never going to be able to do that online. You might be able to, you know, once upon a time, you might have had a luxury experience at a very high-end luxury store and they would have remembered you when you came in and they'll provide a very personalized, crafted experience. But in reality, for you know, the majority of retailers and brands today, they're not able to do that. So I think that's, however, you know, if you have a you know very high-end technical product, probably you might need some human support. But again, that's where AI could also help sift you through to a human very fast. So if that is a, you know, maybe you need like a video, maybe again, you're shopping online, you're buying a very technical product. You know, the AI has helped figure out what that might be, but actually you want to find, you know, final support. Maybe somebody can pop up and actually you can have some human video support in that same interaction.
I mean, clearly the vendor you're using to do this is an important decision. And there are lots of off-the-shelf tools or SaaS tools that you can adopt. What's the decision framework that someone like a CEO or a customer service leader should have thinking through that sort of buy versus build decision?
There's always that question with build, right? You know, how clear are you of what you need? How's it going to work? How long is it going to take? How much resources are you going to get? And then probably the most important thing is, what's that going to look like ongoing? Now, are you sure? I think that's the issue, right? You can always spin up an MVP, but then what's the iteration and innovation versus focusing on a company that's doing that, you know, 24/7, that's all they do. You know, if you've got four or five engineers to build something, how confident are you going to be able to hold on to those engineers when suddenly, you know, next quarter the business has a recession and the results downturn and they're getting pressure to squeeze and costs? And is the business going to be able to accept that MVP? So I think that's always the question. I think for tech first businesses, maybe you're confident you can always have like a good team, 10, 12 engineers focused on this. But I think for the majority of brands and retailers out there, you'll get to value much faster if you partner.
Yeah. And I think even a lot of software companies that think they can do this, it's also not their primary business to build customer service tools or internal AI automation tools.
Exactly. And then how do they get the learn? You know, yes, they might understand their business really well. Then where's the learning and know-how they're going to be able to gauge from other businesses, right? Versus working with somebody that does it every day.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely feels to me like there is still a role for humans in the loop here as, you know, the tools are having conversations. Is there a review process for these chats that are happening that I think you feel companies need to set up as part of their implementation?
Yeah, I think that's critical, right? The testing phase. And I think there's a couple of ways you can do that. You know, there are today a kind of AI agents that are able to do a lot of the QA for you. So they can sift out the obvious mistakes. But then they, you know, before you push something live with your customers, there's probably always an element of some specific QA that your team need to do to be really confident you're rolling out an accurate and effective solution.
This has been super interesting. I mean, I think the conversation about using AI for customer service, how you've adopted it in your go-to-market, you know, some of these differences, how do you use AI in customer service? What is it about? this has been really great. So I appreciate you coming on. One of the things I took away is like, this isn't, you know, just about hitting a button and all of a sudden you're AI enabled and it's done. There's a lot of discipline to defining what you're trying to get out of this to get the results that you really plan, if you even know what those are. Chris, thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate your time today.
Luke, thank you so much for having me. It's been great being on the show.
All right. Thanks so much.